Gosum gupe gone chak chelo Nushami chu chu chi malubu Tome ne sadi tu tam che sha Turn to page 97. And we'll start with a short mandala offering and turn the page and keep going.
Sashi Puki Jushi Meto Tra. Dagi chun yengi pe sunam ki drola penchu sange drupar so. Chudan soki chognam la jangchu bardu dagni kapsuchi. Dagi chun yengi pe sunam ki drola penchu sange drupar so. Chudan soki chognam la jangchu bardu dagni kapsuchi. Dagi chin yengi pe tsunam ki drola penche sange drupa. Kange yato zin yato zin lawa na nyama me zin na me zin yato zin pa kwa tam de lan jan zin la. Good evening. So, welcome back to head spinning class. So, where we stop?
We're just getting ready to start non-valid cognizers.
Non-valid cognizers.
Shula, can you read the definition of non-valid cognizer?
Yeah, on the bottom of page 7.
Mm-hmm.
Non-valid cognizers. The definition of a non-valid cognizer is a cognizer that is not new and incontrovertible.
Non-new. So, that makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not new or new, that refers to the seeing object first time. Okay? Something like this. Then divisions, then subsequent cognizer, divisions, then?
Then wrong consciousnesses?
Better to stick with one term, If you use cognizer, then better to stick with one rather than subsequent cognizer, wrong cognizer.
Okay.
Yeah, probably. And then doubt.
Yeah.
Then?
Correct assumption.
Assuming cognizer. Then?
Inattentive perception.
Unattentive cognizer. Unrecognizer. The same. I'd better use the same. Rather than using one different wrong language. The definition, this is something to remember, by heart. So then that will help. So then you don't have to have books. Whenever you debate, you don't have to bring the books. If you remember by heart. But that requires some kind of debate. It's hard. Otherwise, you have to memorize them. So then, if you debate with saying this same again, so that's how you do. So somebody stand up, then you ask, so what is the definition of subsequent cognizer? Then you've been saying this like more than 100 times. There's one way to remember, then you remember the long time. That's the benefit of debate. It's like that. So the topic that you debate more, then more like you remember that topic long time. Probably you have like less debate, you'll forget quite easily, definition of subsequent cognizer?
The definition of subsequent cognizer is a cognizer that realizes what has already been realized.
See, it makes sense. That's like second moment of everything. Second moment of, eye consciousness sees books. Second moment of that, subsequent cognizer. Then apply it to all the cognizer, all the valid cognizer. Okay. So then the divisions.
So there are two divisions, conceptual subsequent cognizers and non-conceptual subsequent cognizers.
Oh, that's good. Better to stick with the one task, conceptual. So then, illustrations of first one.
Yeah, the example.
Example, yeah.
The examples of the first are a remembering consciousness, remembering blue, that is generated by being induced by a sense direct perceiver apprehending blue.
Yeah, remembering cognizer, probably same. remember cognizer, that's make sense. Now this is like, can you please repeat this?
Yeah. A remembering cognizer, remembering blue, that is generated by being induced by a sense direct perceiver apprehending blue.
And this, all this word is not needed, but it's all there. So anyway. remembering blue because because of the previous moment of eye consciousness, probably less word. So one more time.
A remembering cognizer, remembering blue, that is generated by being induced by a sense direct perceiver apprehending blue.
Or 等一下，等一下，嗯，那个，嗯，嗯，嗯，嗯，then second one.
And the second moment of an inferential cognizer realizing sound as impermanent.
So these are the kind of example of the first one. The second one.
An example of the second is the second moment of a sense direct perceiver apprehending form.
So the only one can you so remembering cognizer, remember cognizer. Every remember cognizer are conceptual thoughts. Okay, remember cognizer. I think almost every one of them is like conceptual thought. So now this is the second moment of direct perceiver, right?
Yeah, the second moment of a sense direct perceiver apprehending form.
Yeah, so then apply same sound, smell. Then apply the same, all the senses, same, the second moment of this, all the direct cognizer, second moment of that, this is all, you know, like, subsequent cognizer, and which is not conceptual. So then all the recalling cognizer produced by eye consciousness or maybe nose consciousness, tongue consciousness, this is all, you know, subsequent cognizer, which is conceptual, okay? These are pretty clear, huh? It's clear, yeah? Yeah?
I'm not sure how sound works into this, because it seems to function in time. I mean, you don't get an instant of sound would be, I think, unrecognizable.
What sound?
Sound seems to take place during an interval of time, really, or over an interval of time. I don't think it exists independently.
Sorry, I don't understand the word interval. What is interval?
Well, the direct perception.
No, I don't understand the word interval sound.
So, Geshe-la, he's saying that.
I understood most of it, but only one
interval
word.
Interval is like the space between two points in time. So, you know, when I touch this mic. And then after that, I touch the mic again. That amount of time is called the interval.
Oh, interval, or between. Space between?
Between two points in time.
Because, rindiji. So that's now that's what you call like. Continuations of substance, jejim called continuation of substance, or continuation of rindijim is like, yeah, there's many continuations, and some of them are like substance continuation, some of them, I don't know how to say rindra, is not just substance continuation, it's also like similar. Say, when you say oh, it's like there's some debate like whether sound has continuation or not.
But I would say, Geshe-la, that you know if you make a sound like
one sound,
you can always split it up into many moments. One 300th or 400th of a second, whatever that division is, right? At each of those moments, there is some sound, right? It's not like it has to be. It doesn't have to be an interval, is what I'm saying.
Okay, so like when you say when you if you make one sound,
right? It can, it but it,
but there's
one,
no there's no space between.
There's no space between, but you could divide it up. Remember, you say what in when
yeah,
you
yeah.
clap your hand, there's 300 or 400 moments, right? In in that clap, right? In that in that moment, right? Or whatever in that.
So let me come back maybe next witness class. This is a little bit complicated. So there's I need to rethink. Certain things has continuation of substance, but does not have continuation of similarity. It means, you know, it's not going to be sound. It's going to be something else. That are indigenous. So now the your question is like, but then there's two sound, one. Second, there's two sound, and what's your?
No, I was just explaining what an interval.
Yeah,
what an interval.
Please give my the interval. Okay, the space between sound. Okay.
What I'm saying is, any sound even contains an interval. It lasts for maybe a couple of milliseconds, very short period of time, but contains an interval. Now, a trained musician would probably hear a lot more in that than I would. So I'm assuming I can't find any singular instance of a sound to have a direct perception of. It seems like a direct perception since you haven't gotten to labeling it yet. It's still taking place over time, though.
So you are saying there's no direct consciousness that apprehend the sound?
Well, I'm not sure.
No.
I can't understand how a direct consciousness could apprehend something over a period of time under the way I felt it was defined. Maybe I'm just wrong on its definition. Maybe a direct perception can take place over an hour and a half. I don't know.
So now the question is, sound is object, right? Sound is object?
Yeah.
It sounds object. If there's anything that's object, there has to correspond with some consciousness.
Right.
So now the ear consciousness, that's direct perceiver. So that ear consciousness corresponds with, not with the form or smell, it corresponds with the sound. So then that there is direct perceiver perceiving sound. Huh? Am I right?
Okay. Yes, I think
so.
You
then,
are right.
then,
I wasn't understanding the nature of it, and I keep forgetting that the ear consciousness is also there. Yeah, I mean, I thought direct perception was just, you know, the ear, but not the consciousness.
Yeah, that's according to the. Yeah.
It makes a little sense, actually.
Yeah, philosophical text, you know, like, tick initiation, this eye consciousness, not eyes, ear consciousness only corresponds with sound. Ear consciousness does not correspond with the form, because this each consciousness is very individual, is corresponding with individual object. So then some, you know, when you debate, you know, they say, does snake has ear? Snake. Has ears?
We don't hear.
Yeah, but not the kind of ear that we see. You know, the obviously the snake don't have that. So some people say, okay, snake perceive sound by eye consciousness. That's when you debate them, honestly, sometimes they say maybe people are way behind scientists. So, of course, you know, probably snake does have ear consciousness.
Well, okay, then here. Sound, then, is actually always a vibration, right? The snake, what he hears is a vibration. Whether he hears it through an eardrum vibrating or some other organ, he still, you know, he gets it through a vibration.
Right.
Or the air or the ground or whatever. So that must mean, then, that it's more than one event.
That's okay.
You understand?
Yeah.
Vibration is
Right. That's okay, even though there's a lot of like interval or space, that's okay. Long as that, even though there's space between the sound, but sound is apprehended by ear consciousness. And that ear consciousness has many moments.
Uh-huh.
The second moment is that's called subsequent cognizer. And kind of hearing what's been heard, hearing subsequent cognizer. So that is like subsequent cognizer, which is not conceptual. Yeah.
These two categories, is this just with the Sam Chomsky school? Because I saw some other definitions that divide it into three.
Yeah, this is like now. Yeah, of course. So, so we should not mix, no, because we can, if we finish studying them, then if you mix, then you are fully aware which is which. So before that, if you mix, it's going to be garam masala. garam masala, that's kind of all the spices you put together, mix together.
So Geshe-la, if I say Om Ah Hung, right, the first moment that I say Om, right, you hear, you have the first moment of ear consciousness, and then the next moment it's no longer a valid valid.
It's a different sound.
When I say Ah, right, so then it becomes again another first moment and second moment, right?
Each time you just hear new sound.
Okay.
Doesn't matter. It's like one after another. There's like every new consciousness.
Right, okay.
Om, there's new consciousness. Ah, there's new consciousness. Hum, there's new consciousness. So then, you know, when you divide it, that, so that's very, very, so if each consciousness, when you divide it, there's many, many, many moments. You know, we can see, so, but you know, there's a moment. So then you go, So then now the wrong cognizer, definition of wrong cognizer?
The definition of a wrong cognizer is a cognizer that engages its object incorrectly.
There's some, probably the words missing in Tibetan text. There's some words missing. So if my memory is correct, the Rayula, it is a Rayula Chinchilajuripa. Maybe there's two words missing. Then also the divisions.
Yeah, two divisions.
Same.
Conceptual wrong consciousness or cognizers and non-conceptual wrong cognizers.
Then first, example of the first one.
Yeah, an example of the first is a conception apprehending that sound is permanent.
So that's entirely wrong. That consciousness is cognized as entirely wrong. Because sound is impermanent, it's not permanent. So there are theories do exist. The Buddha's lifetime in India, there's many, many non-Buddhist theory. Some of them, you know, believe like the sound is the quality of the space. So therefore, you know, this is like it's like same like space. You know, it's like it's permanent. This theory holder has specific names. Before you study Buddhist training, there's many, many other views. You know, there's a lot of them. So that you study them, so then it helps you to understand a little bit this better. So, but this is not how this text, the text that composed by Lama Jesenba begins or start. The second one.
Examples of the second are a visual sense consciousness to which one moon appears as two moons.
Does it make sense? So I'm not sure, like this or something. How you do? So you press up there or up down there, so I'm not sure. Then you see, probably down there, you see now true John. My true John Kessler. What is the John's manifestation? So,
Keshala, when I take off my glasses, I always see two moons.
Really?
Yeah. It's really neat. When I take off my glasses, I see two.
Because you are fortunate
and
one.
There's two of you also.
You have, maybe you have like, you only have like eye consciousness clear ones. So, no, this is only like when you pray something like that, you see two. No? That's also entirely wrong cognizer. No? Then.
And a visual sense consciousness to which a snow mountain appears blue.
Then, yeah, so because if somebody has like a lot of jointed problems, so jointed? Jointed problems, they start seeing something, you know, something white, but they start seeing yellow. You know, so that's because of the disease. Then, so then sometimes mistaken, when you do like this, the mistake is here on the eye sense. Sometimes when you ride a boat, the boat goes so fast and you end up thinking that all this tree is moving, but actually tree is not moving. But that mistaken cause is on the boat, on the spot. No, so sometimes it's over there, sometimes over here. No, so when somebody piece of incense goes like this, then you start to see the wheel, but there's the mistake is on the object. You know, sometimes it's here, sometimes it's on the, if you're riding a boat, you know, so go so fast, you know, so then the moon following you, you know, all of that. It's all, you know, there's sometimes mistake is here, sometimes mistake is on the, on the boat. If you're riding a boat, it's on the boat. Sometimes it's on the object, you know, because they're so fast. In there, there's like there's space, but you don't see space. You're so fast, you see wheel. So that truth, maybe it will come here.
Geshe-la, we call that optical illusion.
Optical illusion.
Optical illusion. Illusion of the eye. Of the vision.
I think maybe you see two moon. I thought that's clear when, no? Okay. Okay. That's easy, no? Nothing much to explain, quite easy, no? And sometimes, you know, in the dark, you know, some object could be just piece of tree or wood, you know, so for you start seeing this moving or maybe something, you know, there's also, you know, mistaken, the cause of mistaken is on the, then it's the boat, you know, it's got here. So then, now the definition of, like, doubt.
The definition of a doubt is a mental factor that, by its own power, hesitates with regard to two alternatives.
Rangtop, you know, own power, this word rangtop is not like affected by prayer will or like this, it's just in this nature, it's like a more like natural. Rangtop, jitani is the rigba. So see, that's the, it's good to remember those definitions, then you know, rangtop, jitani is the way. Simjung or tethung, just like, no, this is like secondary mental factor. So, then, Rando is telling you that the Teda Sundays of Egypt, I'm sure that Tigo the Chornani, Rando is telling you about my name, then I'm telling you that I'm telling you that. So, now can you read? Then I think this is quite easy.
A mental consciousness and an accompanying feeling that have the five concomitants with doubt are not that which.
The five refers to five omnipresent mind, okay? Comes with every consciousness.
The five concomitants with doubt are not that which by its own power wavers with regard to two alternatives, because they waver with regard to two alternatives by the power of doubt.
Yeah, because make sense?
Huh?
No, there's too many words. So like basically, the doubt itself, from this and now it's become can you read the lip again, please? Huh?
Yeah. A mental consciousness and an accompanying feeling.
So, Chungden, the words, so maybe that I'm looking for the word like the mental consciousness and
an accompanying feeling.
Accompanying feeling, then?
That have the five concomitances with doubt are not that which, by its own power, wavers with regard to two alternatives.
Yeah, it sounds much, much complicated in this in the word, but it's not that complicated. Actually, that for example, when you look at this, every consciousness just comes with a four, like five omnipresent mental factor, feeling. When the eye consciousness interact with the glass, but that eye consciousness interacting with the glass by its own power. So then the feeling and the discrimination, all this, five omnipresent mental factors, they are also corresponding with the glass, but not by their own power, but they are interacting with the glass through.
Oh, okay.
So that's what it is here, So that's all these words, but that's what it is here. So then same, all these five omnipresent mental factors, it comes with the doubt. So they are doubting, but not by its own power, but doubting through doubt. And means doubt. Whether it's like discrimination, mental factor, whether it's feeling, there's five of them, right? Five omnipresent mental factors. These are called like Chungden Nambangas. They are same object. It happened the same time. Nipasu Tisu. They are based on the same, they're just based on the mental factor, mental factor. Same substance. There's five of them. One's gone. Like Chungden Nambangas. Well, probably we have five similarities, like object, time, substance, Jesus, Jesus, Nibosu. Then, George?
Yeah.
See, then entity, or maybe aspect, same aspect. So the Jesus, Jesus, Nibosu, Nibosu, Jesus, same time, it's happening same time. Similar, when it's come down, time is similar. Same substance, same object, same aspect, same base. See, it's called the same, this then eye consciousness. Like together with this eye consciousness, this comes with the five omnipresent mental factors. These and eye consciousness, they are same object, same time, same base, same aspect, same substance. Make sense? So then this word is here, Chungden, but it's not in English. English does. What should be there is not there, but the word shouldn't be there. because I'm not able to translate even one word. So I'm grateful they translated it, So see, now this like that, it's not eye consciousness corresponding with the glass. And that with eye consciousness come with the five omnipresent mental factors. So these are corresponding with the glass, not by their own, by through eye consciousness. Similar here, doubt. When you doubt about something, that the doubt comes with five omnipresent mental factors. Those five omnipresent mental factors, they also doubt of the, but not by its own power. It doubts through doubt. See? That's all this word, that's what it means. Bottom line, that's the bottom line. See? So, now when you read next sentence, it still is going to be difficult. All this word, I'm not sure. That's the bottom line. Can you read again? Or?
A mental consciousness and an accompanying feeling that have the five concomitances with doubt are not...
Oh, that's like, oh, the five commentants.
Concomitants.
Yeah, that's what it's called. That's what it's called. Do you recall? Does it ring any bell?
What does concomitant mean?
Oh, yeah. That's what it says in Tibetan. If that helps. There's unmistakable translation. So this could be the... Yeah, that's probably the word for the term for five commentances.
So the five concomitances with doubt are not that which, by its own power, wavers with regard to two alternatives, because they waver with regard to two alternatives by the power of doubt.
Makes sense? Yeah, the bottom line is like doubting object, not by its own power, but its doubting object through doubt.
And what is that? Is that an example of doubt, or what's the heading of that sentence?
Definition.
Oh, that's the definition of doubt. Okay, that's the definition of doubt. What we just said is, I was looking for a title of what that is. Is it an example, or it's the actual definition? Because the definition's above it, a mental factor that by its own power hesitates through doubt. So is it explanation of the definition? Yeah.
What you're saying is you're just giving us the definitions at the same time. So try to prevent the debate. Try to prevent the debate to make it more clear.
So I have it from the concomitant.
So the root text that we use for the mind and mental factors. So there it says, the main mind and the mental factors in its retinue are said to be one entity and concomitant by the way of the five types of similarities.
Mm-hmm.
And so the five types of similarities were support, object of observation, aspect, time, and substance.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
good. That's exactly what I'm trying to dislike. There's something to do with the debate, probably. No need to get too deep. So it's something to do with the debate. The most important is to remember the definition of doubt and the division. So, but it's not that complicated. So now the divisions. There's three of them. The first one, what is it called?
Doubt tending towards the factual.
Oh, that's very good. To the fact. The first one.
Doubt not tending towards the factual.
Then.
And doubt that is equal to both sides.
So I already said this many times. Now probably it will ring the bell. It will ring big bell, not just bell. Example.
An example of the first is a doubt.
Yeah, we take the sound as an example.
a doubt that thinks maybe sound is impermanent.
It goes back and forth. It's permanent or impermanent. Maybe it's impermanent. Because no doubt means you have to, you can just, it's like, and that's how you need to say, you know. But Dhammita Kham means permanent or impermanent or maybe impermanent. That's the first one, okay? Can you say it, please, again?
Yeah. An example of the first is a doubt that thinks maybe sound is impermanent.
Yeah, maybe means you go back and forth. Then you come back to the fact. This one. Then, second?
An example of the second is a doubt that thinks maybe sound is permanent.
Yeah, going back and forth, then, you know, then changing towards more towards, not towards fact, you know. Then,
an example of the third is a doubt that thinks sound is either permanent or impermanent.
Yeah, then decided, you know, so could be permanent, could go either way. Talk on me, you know. And you are not clear, you know, did you? So, then, so now they're out of like, what we call like, what we are studying now? Invalid. Yeah, invalid cognizer divisions. Out of that, we finish subsequent cognizer doubts. So now, correctly assuming cognizer. The definition, Chukila, please.
A conceiving cognizer that accords with what is correct, but is convertible, is controvertible in conceiving its object.
Rayula shembe luwe shiritindu che, luwe shiritindu, sounds kind of strange in the definition. Rayula shembe luwe shiritindu. So through divisions, it will become more clear. What do you mean?
So, five divisions. Correct assumption without a reason. Correct assumption with a contradictory reason. Correct assumption with an indefinite reason. Correct assumption with an inapplicable reason. And correct assumption with a correct but unestablished reason.
This will help greatly throughout our day-to-day life. This, a lot of people get confused and all that. So I'm going to drop me that if
a mind apprehending sound as impermanent based on the mere words sound is impermanent is an example of a correct assumption without a reason.
No, does that make sense? If I say, like, I say, for example, like, yeah, so that's a good example. Just if somebody says, oh, sound is impermanent, because of that, you know, if when you hear, then it's, oh, sound is impermanent, you have this kind of like mindset, sound is impermanent, but there's no reason. It's like, that's not how the sound has been understood as impermanent. That's not how easy it is, no? Right?
It sounds like it's a reason, but it's not a good reason. Right? It's the reason I just heard it from somebody down the street.
Yeah, so you just say, it sounds impermanent. I say, I guess so, because that's what somebody says, it sounds impermanent. But no, seeing sound as impermanent is not that easy. You have to have profound reason to see sound impermanent, because you just, not really know, but you just heard. Somebody says, oh, sound is impermanent, you know. Say, oh, Shankar is a doctor. Somebody says, oh, Dr. Shankar. They say, oh, Shankar is a doctor. But you don't have really, you don't have reason to support that. You just simply say, oh, somebody said, I guess Shankar is a doctor, like something like that. Make sense? There's no, not some nothingness. To merely relying on the sound, oh. So a lot of rumor could be, you know, rumor, you know, like you have no, I say, solid reason. You just said, then you said, then you said, then somebody said, then somebody said, somebody said. They say, like, for example, Yeti, mm-hmm. Yeti, Nepal, you know, so Yeti. So say, oh, they say, talk, so the Yeti reason, who say, oh, someone so and so said. You ask that person, who said, so and so said. Then eventually that so and so will disappear, you know, so that person is no longer alive, so then they're finished.
But it can only be called correct assumption if Vaishankar really is a doctor.
It's
not incorrect, it's correct. It has to be something that's correct, but I don't have a good reason.
That's what it's called. I don't, that's for correct, not what it's called, what that
it
mind
says
is called.
Correct assumption without a reason.
Correct assumption. Yeah, probably needs to be, you know, needs to be something, truth. Yeah.
But you're a doctor now.
Yeah. Sure.
I have a question.
Okay, one time, Lama Yeshe asked me a question, and I said, yes, I think so. And he said, you think, you don't know. So I always wonder, what's the difference between thinking and knowing? So is that what you mean by you know the reason, but it's not correct reason?
No. In this case, you don't know the reason. You don't know the reason.
You don't know.
You don't know the reason because you are just relying on the sound. Or somebody say, oh, sound's impermanent. You just heard sound's impermanent. You don't have reason to believe the sound is impermanent. Even though there's reason, but you don't have reason to believe sound is impermanent because you simply don't know. Yeah. Oh, like something like that. Okay.
Between your opinion and fact?
No, this has to have some base, solid base. Solid base? If you say sound is permanent, so they say, oh, you think your sound is permanent, that is not
a correct assumption.
Yeah, that's not correct assumptions. That's not correct assumption because this sound is not permanent, even though you heard sound is permanent.
Okay.
So now let's move on. Let's go. Jinze, maybe. This, I think, it can't be just Jinze, maybe Jinze. Jinze, maybe Jinze. So now, can you read down for that? Give more explanations. So
I didn't finish the first one. A mind apprehending sound as impermanent based on the mere words sound is impermanent. Is an example of a correct assumption without a reason because sound is impermanent is only a statement that sound is impermanent, but a perfect reason for sound being impermanent is not stated.
Right? Makes sense? If you have to try the second to the last part, can you read that again?
Yeah. Because sound is impermanent is only a statement that sound
only
is impermanent,
statement, then.
But a perfect reason for sound being impermanent is not stated.
Yeah, the perfect reason could be like, oh, sound is not three cycle. Sound is impermanent because it disintegrates moment by moment. That is the reason. That's the reason. No, this is just a sound is impermanent. Didn't give you any reason. Make sense? Oh, yeah, to me.
Then
goes on. Yeah.
A mind apprehending sound as impermanent by the sign of it being empty of the ability to perform a function is an example of a correct assumption with a contradictory reason because being empty of the ability to perform a function is contradictory with sound.
Makes sense. Same like
a mind apprehending sound as impermanent by the sign of its being empty of the ability to perform a function.
Okay, that's like, there's a lot of word there, but actually like so you are saying there's now three cycles. You are saying sound same doesn't change. Second one, the impermanent doesn't change. The last one in the circle, last cycle, it changed. So the correct reason is sound is impermanent. The last cycle should be disintegrate moment by moment. There's a correct reasoning. There's correct reasoning, you know. So like, then the last cycle says, oh, sound is impermanent because it doesn't don't disintegrate moment by moment. All same like this, Tenjin Nyuva. That now you have to remember the definition of like functioning thing. What is the definition of functioning thing? If you remember that, so then you understand this. That's like the opposite of definition of functioning thing. Tenjin Nyutong. It is not functioning. See, people could get idea, oh, sound is impermanent because it's not functioning. People could get some idea. People could get idea of sound is impermanent with the wrong reason. Because our sound is impermanent because it doesn't function. No? See, that's exactly what happened. No? Make sense? Oh, yeah. Tenjin Nyutong Talis, this is a contradict. Whatever you reason is contradict. The third circle, whatever you put there is like not functioning. That and the first circle, the sound is contradict. Sound does function. Sound is functioning thing. You know, so in order to become good reason, so there has to have relationship between sound and the whatever your reason you are. Make sense? Make sense?
Yeah,
so it's not that difficult. Tenjin Nyutong Tale, Dami Dazu Lanyi Bishin, Tenjin Nyutong Dagawa Yimbishis, Tenjin Nyutong Dagawa Yimbishis, Tenjin Nyutong Dagawa Yimbishis. Say, that's like definition of human. What is the definition of human? Able to talk and able to understand, you know? Then you are saying soul is human because they are not able to talk, not able to understand. So that's kind of contradictions. In the same, you know. That's just example. The second one is like that. Sound is impermanent because it exists. You can't just prove that that's not good reason. If something exists, doesn't have to be impermanent. For example, emptiness, space. There's no privations. You can't say perfect reasoning is. Sound is impermanent, disintegrate moment by moment. There's a privation between disintegrate moment by moment, between impermanent, there's privations. If you say, oh, sound is impermanent because it exists, there's no privation. No, if something exists, that has to be impermanent, that's permanent. Make sense? So then this is the second one.
A mind apprehending sound as impermanent by the sign of its being empty of the ability to perform a function is an example of a correct assumption with a contradictory reason, because being empty of the ability to perform a function is contradictory with sound.
Yeah, this is another second one. Yeah.
A mind apprehending sound as impermanent by the sign of its being a measurable object is an example of a correct assumption with an indefinite reason, because being a measurable object is an indefinite reason to establish sound as impermanent.
See, because the object, if something is object, doesn't have to be impermanent. That's why. Make sense? Chivila, you understand?
Sort of.
So what is saying here, look at here, sound is impermanent because it's object. It exists. You can't prove something is impermanent because simply it exists. Because there's no privation. That's what it is. That's what it is. No matter how many words you put there, that's the bottom line. So saying, you know, sound is impermanent because it's not functioning. That's contradictory because sound is functioning. So you can't prove sound is impermanent through the reason, using the reason as not functioning. That's not good reason. Because it's contradictory because sound is functioning. Right? Functioning things. Same, you cannot prove sound is impermanent simply because it's object. Object, measurable object?
Yes, measurable object.
Yeah, measurable object If something is a measurable object, doesn't have to be impermanent. For example, space, no? Permanent, emptiness, mm-hmm. no?
I just want to clarify what I think I heard.
Mm-hmm.
Because it exists, there can be permanent things and impermanent things as existing.
Exactly.
So just because we say that sound exists, it could be, by that definition, either permanent or impermanent.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not enough clarification of a reason to say that sound exists.
Correct, correct. That's very correct. Yeah, that's exactly like that. So, so that's why it's called, like, how is it? This is what it's called. This is what is
indefinite reason.
Example up. This is example up.
Correct assumption with an indefinite reason.
Yeah. As there's like second one.
The second one is. The first is a correct assumption without a reason.
And the second one.
Correct assumption with a contradictory reason.
This is the one we are reading now, right?
No, we went on to the correct assumption with an indefinite reason. You want me to read the fourth one?
You can read it.
The correct assumption with an inapplicable reason?
Yeah.
That one? A mind apprehending sound as impermanent by the sign of its being an object of apprehension of an eye consciousness is an example of a correct assumption.
Right after measurable object. So can you read it again?
Yeah, sorry. A mind apprehending sound as impermanent by the sign of its being a measurable object is an example of a correct assumption with an indefinite reason.
Well, so then after that, what it says?
Because being a measurable object is an indefinite reason to establish sound as impermanent.
So then that's finished, right? Because there's what do you call it? Like syllogism? What's called syllogism? Yeah, there's not many syllogisms. There's each has names. So mange bitinsi means tinsi. There's a syllogism or reason. Reasoning. It sounds very short. We call pa tinsi, but it's all even same is also short too. But you know, it makes more sense. Tinsik means no reasoning. That's a little bit better translated, reasoning. The reasoning is there's many different kind of reasoning, and each one has name. So right after the lorik, the mind and the mental factor, there's another text, skotarik. So that text is all about reasoning. This is all about reasoning, you know. The mountain that has smoke, there's fire, to think about it, maybe there's fire because there's smoke, all there are many syllogism like that, you know, this text is from beginning to end, it's all about syllogism, called Tariq. So then there's there's many names, you know, this is one of the names, Mangebitinzi, Shajadandar Mangebitinzi. Basically, there's no privation between third circle and the second circle. There's no privation. So we talk about that. This is very quite difficult. Like chaba means no. Then there's now I think it's going to explode our head. So probably not a good idea. So there's called someone's called J chab, Do chab, Chaba Nama. There's many of them. So, not trying to discourage you, but you know, there's like, but dealing with the day-to-day life problem, those doesn't supposed to help, but doesn't help that much. So anyway, so now the The second one, number four,
the correct assumption with an inapplicable reason.
Can you make connection between that? No, because these are the, also you have to say what is what this. That's the example of what. The one we are reading is example of what, Chukla?
The one we just read was correct assumption with an indefinite reason.
Yeah, please, you can also say that now, example up.
And so the next one's a correct assumption with an inapplicable reason. A mind...
So then can you make, can you link? Okay, that's good.
A mind apprehending sound as an impermanent by the sign of its being an object of apprehension of an I consciousness is an example of a correct assumption with an inapplicable reason, because being an object of apprehension of an I consciousness is an inapplicable reason to establish sound as impermanent.
Makes sense? No, that doesn't make sense. Even though there are so many words, you know, basically it's like only few words.
Like
saying that sound is impermanent because it's comprehended by eye consciousness doesn't make sense. No, whatever you are saying is not. No.
It's like sound is impermanent because the sky is blue. Like they're completely unrelated.
Mm. Yeah, music from just.
How is that different from the contradictory reason?
Oh, it is. Like that.
If I say, forget the one about the sky is blue, because those things don't relate. You know, but I mean. I guess take the sky as blue. The sound is impermanent because the sky is blue. Why is that not a contradictory reason, correct assumption due to contradictory reason? Well, you could argue that our contradictory reason implies that it's exact opposite of what the right reason is. But sky is blue is just dumb reason.
Unrelated.
Yeah. Unrelated reason.
Yeah.
Capable of making a connection. Also, also something to do with, you know, there's also like explaining something at the same time, trying to, how to say, prove that there's some other theory is wrong. You know, because some theory, they believe the sound is apprehended by our consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And some theory, they believe like sound is not functioning. So the underline that indirectly you're, you know, like kind of also proving is not just, you know, like sound is impermanent because sky is blue, you know. But you could say that, but you know, that's why they are saying this sound is impermanent because it's apprehended by eye consciousness. Same time it's proving that some theory out there is wrong. It's not like
For number two, the one for the contradictory reason, does that have to be the exact opposite then? It's always the opposite, meaning it's the contradictory?
The correct reason.
The correct assumption with the contradictory reason, does that mean the reason is always the opposite of actually the correct reason?
No, so now, see, please need to draw the circles. Now circles need to, sorry, so she offered to draw, so I said no. So now, needs to go, now it's that there's a confusion here. So now, when you say contradictory, you have to think about the second circle, between second circle and third circle, you have to think about that, you know. Then one line here, America, everything's big. So now here, whenever you say contradict, you have to think about these two lines, these two circles, you know, here, now, for example, I mean, there's sound, there's part of sound, for example, so this is impermanent, Okay, so now here, first you just say the not functioning, the second one, contradiction.
Yes, right, contradictory.
Then like, then here, don't write, here what we have, here, what we have, non.
The example that they gave here?
Non-functioning, what is it called?
Contradiction is because being empty of the ability to perform a function.
Empty, yeah. Like, that's like literally translating. Yeah. Basically,
can't perform a function.
Huh?
Can't perform a function.
Yeah. Can't perform a function. It's not, for example, it's here, okay? Why is contradiction? Why is this contradiction? What is the example?
Contradictory. Contradictory reason.
Yeah, contradiction. Because there's negative relationship. Impermanent means something has to be function. Opposite. Here, now, you are proving sound is impermanent through not functioning. Not functioning?
Non-functioning,
or whatever you said. That.
Yeah.
These two are contradict.
Okay.
Make sense? So now, like, another one, this one, eye consciousness.
Yeah. So, let's see. The mind apprehending sound is impermanent by the sign of its being an object of apprehension of an eye consciousness.
See, now this here. The object. Then
object of apprehension of an eye consciousness.
Because my mouth is now getting like.
Object of apprehension of an eye consciousness.
Yeah, object of apprehension. Yeah, when I point, please you say. Here.
Object of an apprehension of an eye consciousness.
Here. Yeah, so now there's no contradictions. Right? That's why it's not, that's different. Now see different, you see different?
Yes.
No, you see different, first one is called contradict. Somebody's wondering why, then this the same, what's different? Now there's different, you see different?
Yes.
So there is relationship. Object?
The object of apprehension of an eye consciousness.
Oh, that's something of object? There's no contradictions. Why there's no contradictions? It's not contradiction. There's something you can show, something that's both. See? Prairial. That's impermanent. That's seen by eye consciousness. It's both. There's no contradictions. If it's a contradiction, you cannot show one thing that's both.
But it's contradictory to sound.
Yeah? No, that's not how you... So like... when you say contradict, you have to think about these two circles, not this.
Okay.
These two circles. Otherwise, then if somebody says there's no different object seen by eye consciousness or non-functioning, why there's two, they're same, then it could be contradict, both then could be contradict condition.
Okay.
It's clear?
Yeah.
Is it clear? Yeah, if you clear, then to clarify, please say in good English. So now see, like, okay, I will raise the question because somebody already raised the question. Sound is impermanent because, like, seen by eye consciousness. Why there's not
contradictory?
Why there's not example up?
The contradictory reason.
Yeah. Sound is impermanent, seen by eye consciousness. Right? That one. Why this is not example up?
A contradictory reason.
Yeah. I'm asking you to explain in better English. So why is not contradictory?
Could you repeat the question?
Repeat it again. Because
they're
not the opposite.
Wait, what's the question?
Say the whole thing again.
Sound is impermanent because seen by eye consciousness.
Okay.
Right?
Okay,
why this is not contradictory.
Why this is not example of
a correct deception with a contradictory reason.
So there's somebody wondering, that's why I'm clarified. So then, the example of that is like sound is impermanent because it's non-functioning.
That's
that is contradiction.
Right. Right.
That's the example of contradiction of something, but this is not.
Okay.
Hmm.
So, from what you were saying before, like
these circles, they're supposed to help us because of the connection here, so this
right.
is not a contradictory connection to impermanence.
Right.
If it was a contradictory connection to impermanence, then it would be an example of contradiction. But it's not an example of contradiction.
Why not? Why not?
Because I consciousness and impermanent do have a relationship to each other. They're not contradictions.
Oh, very good. So that's why does that make sense? Yeah, that's the question that is. So now. So then, like, so now, like, sound is impermanent because not functioning. Not functioning?
I'm sorry, can I still say?
Sound is impermanent, that's not functioning.
Right.
So that is the example of
contradictory reason.
Why?
Okay, because non-functioning, non-functioning is contradictory to impermanence. I'm trying to work in pervasion here.
Yeah.
There's no pervasion between those two, so they're contradictory.
But whenever you think about pervasion, then you know, why is contradiction? Because there's you cannot show any object that is both circle.
Okay.
Right?
Okay, right.
So eye consciousness, you can show something that's both circle.
Mm-hmm.
There's second circle, there's the third circle, because travel is impermanent, it's like seen by eye consciousness, it's both. But here you cannot show one thing that's both.
Right.
That's why there are contradictions. Shiti means, you know, like the mutual has a
mutual.
Yeah, mutually inclusive shiti, you know. Mutually inclusive there you have to show something that's both. There's no mutual inclusive.
Right.
So that's why it's like contradiction. So then third one is not contradictions. May I clarify?
Awesome.
Yeah, so that's good. So there's somebody, maybe Shankar raised this question. So you have to think about these two circles. Not this one. But there is a relationship.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay, thank you. So let's go. Yeah.
I have a question.
Yeah.
How can you say that space is permanent? Because, can you see space here? Space there? There's space. Right? It pushed that there, there's no space. So it moved, it changed, it's impermanent. Also, space is also functioning. Because everything happens within space. Everything becomes within space. So space allows things to appear.
Impermanent or not permanent, you have to go back to the definition of impermanent. Something that momentarily change.
Yeah.
Momentarily change.
Okay. If I put the cushion here...
But that's compounded space. That's compounded
occupying.
Space.
That's like occupying.
That's the obstruct. That's the space that's called what is it's a non-compounded. But it's like the space in between a donut.
Yeah.
Okay, that space exists because the donut exists.
Right.
Without the donut, that space does not exist. So that's why it's compounded space.
Without the space.
No, the space that Gessler is talking about is uncompounded space, which is permanent because that just pervades everything.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't change moment by moment. It cannot be.
So now
it's space that pervades all objects. Everything.
Obvious change. Such as, you know, people die, the things break. Obvious change happens because of the momentary change. If there's no momentary change, there will be no obvious change. Obvious change happening because of the momentary change. That it's changing every single moment. It's changing because of that. Something is going to break. So that breaking things has come, it takes place because it's changing, constantly changing. If there's no constantly changing, there will be no obvious change. So now space, you can't talk about obvious change. Space?
You can't talk about obvious change?
Mm-hmm. Space.
It doesn't change moment to moment.
When you say space, which space are we talking about?
I think you said it very well.
Which part?
The donut space.
Right. So take the space in a donut. Is that the space you're talking about?
No.
Okay, so... Right.
Yeah.
So it's so you.
That's how they say in English, compounded, uncompounded.
Yeah, they use compounded.
Yeah,
space.
So that's probably that's like.
So this is non-compounded space.
When you're pointing at, I'm not sure what you're pointing at. If that space is, if you're talking about the space inside a room, like this space here, or the space in between you and John, that's compounded space. That exists only because you and John are here existing, and we're talking about in relation to you and John. But space, the space that we are, that inside my body, right inside, the space that my mind is in, that whole space that pervades everything is the space.
No. Even though this space, Wendy, space between you and John, this space is also dependent. It's not independent. It's dependent. It's dependent on direction. It has no south, east, west, north. It is dependent, but it's not impermanent.
There's no part.
But it doesn't change. Even though you put, you are saying. Oh, I put this here. Now this space is occupied. Doesn't change. It doesn't change. When you take it away, it's no. Doesn't change.
That's your compound space. That's the space that pervades. Right, the clock and everything.
We are talking about momentary change. When you take this out, does it change? Momentary change. Or before you put it here, it does here. Does it change? Yeah, objects move around, the space is the same.
I always wondered about that all my life.
Same. Okay. Now, I'm not sure, compound and compound is the same, because it has, you can't say, oh, it changed because it has directions, or something's here, it doesn't here, it doesn't change, this doesn't change. You just move around the object, it doesn't change.
Okay.
Yeah. So then, what is it?
You like the example I gave
with
the clouds
and the sky. The sky is permanent, right? Sky is permanent.
Space.
It doesn't change because, when the clouds come here, it's not like it's changing. It's over here, it's not changing, same. So now, Shankar, was it compound and uncompounded? There's more like dependent. Some space is has directions, So this space, this called west, is north. So you, when you talk about north, so then some space, there's no real directions. So then compound or...
The space inside a bowl?
Yeah, here in the cup.
There's a direction inside the bowl?
The cup, for example, this cup is now, there's no much space because it's filled with the water. So does that mean it's changing? It's changing. It's not changing. When it's drinking the water, it's space there, it's not changing. So then, anything that's momentary change, then there has to be obvious change. Eventually there has to be obvious change. So that I don't think how you can say obvious change in space. So now, Shankar, what is why do they talk about compound or uncompound space?
Well, my understanding was, Geshe-la, that if you have, let's say, space inside a bowl.
It's not permanent.
It's not permanent.
Is it impermanent?
space inside a bowl is it's dependent on the bowl.
Yeah, yeah. Every existing thing is dependent.
Right. Uh-huh. So they said it was compounded space because it is dependent on the bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But there's not like they are trying to prove that inside the space inside bowl is impermanent. That's not why they make this distinction.
That's a good question. I was trying to find that reference, Geshe-la. I'll find out, and then I just don't remember that part of it.
Okay. Yeah. I think,
let's see, are we on number four, Geshe-la? Correct assumption with an inapplicable reason? Yeah. So a mind apprehending sound as impermanent by the sign of its being an object of apprehension of an eye consciousness is an example of a correct assumption with an inapplicable reason, because being an object of apprehension of an eye consciousness is an inapplicable reason to establish sound as impermanent.
It makes sense. Eventually you read slowly, some of the word not probably necessary. But as I said, they did a fantastic job. So if you somehow, all the Tibetan texts disappear, when you translate from there to there, it will be exact Tibetan, it will be very, very helpful. When you translate back to Tibetan. Some of the words, because first one, like, so now that they are like explaining, right? Further explanations. Why is the example up? Number four.
It's an example of a correct assumption with an inapplicable reason because being an object of apprehension of an eye consciousness is an inapplicable reason to establish sound as impermanent.
Yeah, so I said there's all the reasoning, some of the Mangyevitinji. The first one is called Mangyevitinji. So now this one is called Matsubitinji. There's a different name. So they're trying to explain that. Dhammidabha Tsime.
So the last one?
The last one is
the correct assumption with a correct but unestablished reason. A mind apprehending sound as impermanent by the sign product in the continuum of a person who has not ascertained with valid cognition that sound is impermanent is an example of a correct assumption with a correct but unestablished reason because although product is a correct sign to establish sound as impermanent, that correct sign has not been established by that person.
Makes sense?
I actually understand that one.
Oh, very good. So, knowing, understanding, realizing. You understand sound is impermanent, but you don't realize sound is impermanent. You understand, because Gijikele says sound is impermanent because it's like, as a Dajmita Chepa,
because it's a product.
Yeah, product, that's called Chepa. Sound is impermanent. Sound is impermanent because it's a product. You kind of understand, Gijigele says sound is impermanent, it's a product. I guess maybe sound is impermanent because it's a product. But you didn't realize, in order to realize sound is impermanent, you have to understand it momentary change.
Mm-hmm.
Sound is a momentary change. That is heart, right? Even this prayer will look same every day when we come to class. It looks same, but it's not same. It's constantly changing, but we don't see that. We don't realize that. We don't realize it's constantly changing, but we kind of know it's constantly changing, but we don't realize. So that's why, this makes this the problem long, but that's what it is.
Mm.
You kind of understood by poor drug, maybe sounds impermanent, but you have reason, but you are not able to, establish the reason you are not able to establish through the reason. What you are not able to establish is sound is impermanent. You are not able to establish that based on product because you yeah, you don't realize sounds momentarily change. Make sense? Isn't that whatever the many words is, that's the bottom line.
The definition of an inattentive perception.
No.
That's what's next. Do you want me to read
that
one
again? Oh, so you only read all of them, okay. Chepa dhammi dhabba dhubi jimze yanda hiyas. Even though portal is the perfect or correct reason to prove sound is impermanent. Chepa dhammi jimze yanda hiyas. Then there is a this. But for you, jimze yanda de, then for you, there's not, you just, you know, understand because somebody says, or it's not like you really think, okay, sound must disintegrate moment by moment because it's a product. It's not, you don't have realizations of that. You don't have realization. No, it's just heard. Yeah. So no, because you think okay, sound is impermanent because Gilas is a product. It makes sense. Maybe sounds impermanent, but you are not really. No, sound is impermanent because it has. It sounds impermanent because it's a product. If something is a product, it has to be disintegrated moment by moment. You don't really have established or realized that. Yeah.
Keshe, I found the reference about the non-compounded space. And do you want me to?
Yeah, what is it?
It's actually from a teaching by Geshe Shulga.
Mm.
And he said, the non-compounded is stated because there is also space that is compounded. The example given is a space that we see through a hole. When the hole is gone, the space is also gone, so that space is not permanent. Non-compounded space is space in general, and that is permanent. And that's what he says.
Oh, this space in the hole.
The space, if we see space through a hole, when the hole is gone, the space is also gone. So that space is not, so that space is not permanent.
Hole is gone, how the hole is gone?
If you eat the donut, if you have a hole in a donut, for example, and eat the donut, that space disappears, if you will. So that space is compounded space, he's saying.
Yeah, the described space in relation to the donut.
Right, exactly. The space, but the big space, he talks about the, you know, he says the non-compounded space is space in general, just everything.
So now when you fill this glass, is the space gone?
The space is filled with water.
Which space?
Right.
The space in the glass.
Yeah, compounded space in the glass is gone, yes.
No, that like before glass is empty. So then if it's not empty, you cannot pour anything. When you pour the water, that space is gone?
That's what Geshe Shulga is saying.
So then if the space is gone, you can't drink water.
No.
There's nowhere to put it.
No, then there will be no water.
No, but get your snack. The cup is space is wrong, but the cup's intact. Why can't you pour water into it? Of course you can.
When you pour the water in the cup.
It depends on the cup being there.
My question is, this cup is empty. When you fill the cup, that space is gone? My question.
No, it's just filled with water.
There's space is gone. If there is space is gone, there will be no water.
But that's uncompounded space then you're talking about.
Two different things.
Right?
Huh?
That's why I
guess it's all good. I can't stand it for a second.
Okay. You could say that the space is occupied. I think that using compounded and uncompounded is, I think that's helpful for me. But I think then that, and uncompounded space is omnipresent.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the space.
So uncompounded space doesn't disappear.
Where is uncompounded space? Where?
It's omnipresent.
Everywhere.
Everywhere.
The mental
Uncompounded space is everywhere. I mean, it's...
So it's in glass?
Yes.
Yes.
Compounded space goes away. Is that right?
In the glass, in the space in the glass, there's uncompounded or compounded?
No, no. The space that the air inside the glass is in, that's the compounded space we're talking about, which is then the air goes away and the water comes in, right? And that space is basically what that's our designation for that volume.
Air is impermanent.
Air is impermanent.
So the space.
What if I still
have
the
in the glass. And yeah,
the space is the uncompounded space is permanent. Also, the cup also occupies space.
Exactly. Otherwise, there would be
right.
You can't move around.
And that's which is so that space, the space that the cup occupies, is different than the space that the water occupies in the cup.
Mm.
So those are both examples of compounded space.
Mm. The both. Outside or inside both.
But if you speak in terms of uncompounded, they are the same. I mean, if you were speaking in terms of uncompounded space, there's no compounded space. See, it disappears. Okay, I'm sorry. So, compounded space is permanent and
impermanent.
No, I'm sorry. Compound space is impermanent. I'm sorry. Uncompounded space is permanent.
It's everywhere.
Everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And unchanging. It can be occupied. It can disappear. Or, I mean, in terms of compounded, mm-hmm. if you talk, then it. So those are.
Yeah, so now then.
The space in your hand is. See that? If you have a space in your hand, in between my hands.
Yeah, well, there's space between hands. That's compounded.
That's compounded.
When you do that, it's gone.
Gone. So, what you.
There's space gone.
Right.
That space is gone.
Hmm?
The compounded space is gone. But the space of your hand and everything occupied is still there. That's uncompounded space.
Right.
So then now that this cup is filled with the water, that space is gone.
The compounded space is gone.
Then when you like clean the bowl, it's come back. It's gone for this. Only gone for temporarily. It's not gone. Really gone.
Right.
Mm. Yeah,
it sounds so complicated. I don't think it's that complicated. Mm. I think, okay, the sky is permanent. Then there's clouds in the sky that make the sky look cloudy.
Mm.
Those are two different things, but the sky is always there.
The sky is compounded.
I can't deal with this compounding. to me it's more like a description of the space in the bowl. The space in the bowl. You smash the bowl, the space is still there. You just can no longer say the space in the bowl.
Right.
The space is always there.
Yeah. Right.
These other things are just descriptions. And those descriptions can change, like clouds in the sky.
It's just designations we give to talk about that volume that is, surrounded by the cup.
Mm.
Anyway,
we're getting it good, right?
So what Gisuka said is like Gisuka said, the whole space in the whole, that's impermanent.
He said that non-compounded is stated because there is also space that is compounded. The example given is a space that we see through a hole. When the hole is gone, the space is also gone. So that space is not permanent.
So I'm not sure what to say about that, so I'm not sure, but I disagree.
Okay.
So,
I think that's necessarily a good example.
That's why I'm asking the question.
Right, so I may need to think about, so anyway, good debate, thank you very much, very good debate, so more debate necessary. So then it allows you to think, you know. Whenever you start to think, then your mind is getting sharper. And if you don't think, then mind is getting, you know, not like the same thing, you know. If you're always thinking of prayer, we pray the part, not sort of like, you know, thinking this side, you know, it opens up, you know, so. Oh, very good. So,
I think it's a record.
Yeah, it's a record. Especially my teaching style, this record that we are, it's kind of miracle that we are going further down.
We want you to know that it's more important, at least for me, to understand the material.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, yeah.
But not just
that. Yeah, yeah. So then it's going to be like the brown bear catching the mice. You think that you catch 10 of them, when you look, there's only one. So if you are lucky enough, there's only one left.
We're both doing homework.
What homework should we?
So maybe talk a little bit about this, you know, this, all this like example of those invalid cognizers or the old...